Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Nottingham Playcast. The podcast is about to begin. Please take your seats.
Welcome to another edition of Nottingham Playcast. We've got something a little bit different for you this month. You're about to hear our first ever episode recorded in front of a live studio audience. What we did is we recorded for you part of a special event that we held recently for our Playhouse Pass members. Members get big discounts, priority booking, and also invitations to special events like this. I happen to run Playhouse Pass, which meant it was my honour to introduce our very special guest at this event, Alex Kingston, who, as I said on the night, I think is just one of the most charismatic actors out there. She was in conversation with our artistic director, Adam Penford, who's directing her in An Enemy of the People. Here they are.
I've got to say it, don't I? Hello, sweeties.
Is that always your introduction?
Yeah.
Yes. Amazing. Thank you so much for coming this evening. Thank you to Brewin Dolphin for sponsoring the event and the production, indeed. Alex, thank you for coming this evening. We've had a long day in rehearsals, haven't we?
Yeah.
Because your director's a taskmaster. Hello. What I thought I'd begin with is a little off-the-cuff question. Screen, do you prefer TV? Do you prefer films or do you prefer theatre? If you could only do one for the rest of your career, what would you go with? I know, tough question. I'm like Parkinson. I start with the tough question.
I'll give you the final answer at the end of my answer.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I've actually been asked this question before.
Oh, yeah.
Not original.
Great.
Not original.
Thought that was so good.
I don't care what medium it is that I'm working in. It's the actual character that is the thing that fires me. So, I mean, I became an actress because I thought that all I would ever do is theatre. You know, way back then, one didn't even imagine that one would do film, let alone television. I mean, I just didn't. I wanted to be an actress because I wanted to be on the stage. And then sort of little by little, I got sort of film, television roles. But that was never my expectation or intention when I started out. Having said that, like I said, it's the role itself that is the thing that fires me. So I really don't care what the medium is. It's about the character that I'm playing. It's very hard to actually survive financially if you're only doing theatre nowadays, which is incredibly sad. And it's an unfortunate state that we should not be in, actually. So one has to, if one wants to live solely as an actor, one has to supplement, if one can, by trying to get film and television work. But I enjoy all three because they're all very different and they require different sets of skills. But I think if you really want to have longevity as an actor, you have to be able to be on the stage.
Thank you. I've got an answer, you see. Did the other interviewer get an answer?
Kind of.
I want to whiz you back in time. I want to go back to Surrey. How did you get into performing? What was the background? Did you see something and that inspired you? What was your beginning?
No, I think I wasn't aware that I wanted to be an actor. Mm. I thought, after wanting to be a princess, I then thought I wanted to be a flight attendant, which back then was called air stewardess. And I then moved on from that and thought I wanted to be a barrister. But I realised that it was not about the actual job, it was about the costume.
Right.
And it was about the dressing up. And also, I'm numerically dyslexic, so I didn't get maths O level, I didn't even get maths CSE. I mean, I'm really very bad at maths. And so there was no hope of university. Yeah. So my only options were basically art school, drama school. And I was actually compiling a portfolio to do a foundation course at art school. And then I sort of just thought, no, that's really not where my heart is. My heart is theatre. My mum is German and her brother is an actor in Germany. And so as a child, whenever I went over to visit my grandmother and my uncle and aunts and everything, I would always go and see whatever production he was in. Mm. And it was always some heavy German play that didn't have costumes or props. It was always just very dark and still. And but for me, I loved going because I loved going backstage. And in Germany, in every town, they have so much money poured into them. So you have the most incredible opera houses, you have the most incredible theatres, and there's no graft or sort of, you know, actors are very well paid. It's sort of almost like a 9-to-5 job in these towns once you become part of the theatre company. And so I would go back to these, like the local town, and their theatre was like the national theatre. And you go backstage and the prop houses were huge and and sort of just extraordinary. And I loved being in that world. I loved going into the dressing room and seeing all of his makeup. And so I think that's really where it where the seed was sowed. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, he always said to my mum, she's going to be an actress.
Oh, really?
And he said, she will play queens and doctors.
How old's that?
Yeah, I know.
and you went to RADA, which many would consider the greatest UK drama school, I think. Because if you do look at the alumni of RADA, I mean, our greatest actors train there. Was there something, how did you find the training? You know, was there a sense of...
I loved my time at RADA. In fact, it was very different to the other drama schools in terms of how you worked and how they sort of, they set everything up. Because one... you performed to the public immediately. Hmm. And you had to be, the public were members of the Vanbrugh Theatre Club. But essentially, from literally the first term, you whatever you did, you performed publicly, which a lot of, most drama schools don't do. They only show their students in their final year. What was so special was, you know, at the beginning, we were all rubbish. But the audience, the Vanbrugh Theatre Club members, that's what they loved, because they were tracking you from the very beginning, where you were useless, rubbish, you know, not confident. And they watched the progression of the students through those. Then it was 2 years and one term as opposed to 3 years, until you then kind of was sort of ushered out the doors. So I think for a member of the audience, it was a very interesting... They felt they were part of the journey as well. Mm. And I loved it. We also had, we always had outside directors. So directors who were working, who just finished doing a play somewhere and they had some time. So they would come in and work with us. So you felt like you were a proper professional company working with somebody who just recently been directing famous actors, as far as we were concerned. So I could have happily stayed there forever, to be honest. I really could. I didn't want to leave. I loved it. Yeah.
Can I skip to Moll Flanders?
Totally.
Yeah. I remember it. Was it mid-90s? I remember it being in the mid-90s. I remember watching it so clearly.
1998?
Oh, was it? Okay, so late 90s.
Yeah, because I went straight after that to America. So it must have been 96, 98, something like that.
I remember you sort of being everywhere during that programme.
Was I?
Yes, that was that's what I remember.
What? How do you mean everywhere?
Well, it was just sort of all over the magazines and
was
all over
I?
The... Yes, yes. God. So you didn't have a sense of how massive that role... It just felt huge at the time.
No, I loved the costumes. I really loved the costumes. I loved that red velvet. That was, I think, my favourite. With a gorgeous big hat and everything. I was very intimidated by Diana Rigg. She was perfectly fine, but it was just sort of being in her presence. I felt very, intimidated by her.
Yeah. How long had you been out of RADA? How far in was it?
Quite a long time.
Right, okay.
I graduated in 85 and then I spent basically 10 years in regional theatre.
Right. We like that.
I liked
it. Yes, of
I loved it. That was kind of, I felt that was almost like my apprenticeship.
Right.
You know, I felt I left RADA thinking I knew it all, but it was only actually when I was going from regional theatre to regional theatre company that actually you really do. That's where you learn your craft. And I was perfectly happy doing that. So I didn't do any television for the first 10 years, pretty much. And but so Moll Flanders, I mean, I'd done little bits and pieces, but I was not, it was a medium that I wasn't particularly comfortable with. I didn't really know much about television acting. And I pretty much learnt a lot. I learnt a certain amount on Moll Flanders. I learnt the most on ER.
Yes.
But I had a lot of husbands. One of them was James Bond. So I was very happy.
Well, you've mentioned ER. Tell us about ER. I mean, it was huge at the time, wasn't it? Like one of the big, I remember watching it.
It was the biggest show
on Thursday
on
nights. I seem to remember it being on Thursday nights. Because you were in America, so it would have been screening at different nights.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, because I was busy doing theatre, I actually wasn't particularly aware of ER. I mean, I didn't watch it. I didn't really have... I had a vague sense I'd heard about it, but I didn't watch it.
And you went in on third or fourth series?
I went on third, yes. Right, yeah. And I had gone over to promote Moll Flanders in America. Mm. And I'd gone to New York first, and then I had gone on to L.A., and I was advised to stay and not to leave the United States before it aired.
Okay.
And I was advised that because there would probably be interest, people would be interested in meeting me after it had aired. Mm-hmm. There was already that sort of sense about it. And so I stayed and I had some meetings and then it was the day that I was due to fly back to London, and I got a phone call in the late morning and was told the producers of ER would like to meet you. And I said, well, I'm on my way to the airport, I'm leaving. And so they said, well, can you stop by on your way to the airport? So I was like, sure. So we had a detour to Warner Brothers, and I had a meeting with the producers and sat and chatted. I'd also been offered, they were doing the Marat Saad at the National Theatre.
Yeah.
And I had been offered Corday.
All right.
And so I sat and they asked if that, you know, what was coming up, and I said, well, I've been offered the role of Charlotte Corday in the Marat Saad, and so was just sort of chatting, and then got to the airport, got on the plane, and when I landed, my agent, there was a message from my agent, she said, call me, and she said, they've offered you a job on ER.
Wow.
And that's why my character was called Dr. Corday.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great, isn't it? What a great story.
Yeah.
And when you took up the role, did you have any... How long were you with it? You were with it a long time, weren't you? Did you know it was going to be...
I was 8 seasons.
Yeah. Did you know it was going to take, you know, that much of a chunk of your life?
Well, I was only... It was very funny because, for a start, being... I mean, my goodness, you know, you don't know how the system works over there. I had been incredibly lucky to have been given the opportunity just to meet the producers just as a chat and then leave, mm-hmm. and then be offered the part.
Yeah.
That just does not happen.
It's normally round after round.
Round after round, and you have to screen test and you have to do all these things.
Chemistry test.
And, yeah. And so what I didn't know was that John Wells, who was the showrunner of ER, that's the sort of showrunner is producer. He also was the producer showrunner of West Wing. I mean, he was literally at the time the hottest showrunner in Hollywood. The heads of NBC, which was the television network that the show was on, had basically said to him, well, we don't know if this girl can act. All we know is that she can wear a corset. and he had said, he had absolutely was my champion, and he said, I want her. I don't care what you say. You know, we're not screen testing her. I want her. And so, you know, I didn't know any of this. All I thought was that they were only going to offer me a year's contract. And I just thought, I'll go there. After a couple of episodes, they've realised they've made a massive mistake. And that'll be it. And my agent was negotiating with them. And she said, yes, you know, they're only willing to sign you for a year. This was NBC, were only willing to sign you for a year because they think you can't do anything other than wear a corset. But she said, John Wells has promised me that your contract is 5 years. So we have to just trust him. And he was absolutely true to his word. Right. And then after that 5 years, then, you know, we renegotiated and I stayed on for longer. But it was an amazing experience. It was amazing. The studio in which we had our set, we were at Warner Brothers in Los Angeles, even though the show is set in Chicago. And so all of our interiors were on an interior set. And that soundstage was the soundstage where they had filmed Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Oh.
So for me, it was, oh my God. Yeah. But they also then had a back lot. They have a big back lot. And so there was the ambulance bay, beginnings of walking up onto the L train, which is their subway. Mm-hmm. And there'd be the diner car and things like that. So all of that was kind of built on the back lot, and they had enormous flats to hide the palm trees and everything, so you couldn't see any of that. Yeah. But then we would go every season, so 4 times a year, we would go to Chicago for a sort of a long weekend. So we'd fly on the Wednesday and come back on the following Tuesday, and we'd shoot any exteriors that were required for that chunk of episodes. So it was seasonal, spring, summer, autumn, winter.
It's quite a big machine, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big machine.
And what were your castmates like?
They were all amazing. I mean, we were very lucky. We had a great reputation in Hollywood, which was that we were one of the nicest TV casts. So that day players or actors that were coming in to do a story arc or whatever, they would say, oh, everybody said that it's going to be a nice experience.
Yeah.
Because, believe you me, it's not like that lot of the time on everything. But it was good. Everybody, it felt like a family. Everybody was very generous with one another. The crew were all very much part of that family. Mm. There was never any sense of, oh, the actors and the crew. You know, we were always together. There'd be barbecues. We'd all turn up, and so it was. Oh gosh, I mean, it was amazing. Yeah. And we had incredible storylines. I mean, on the whole, I think towards the end it got more soapy, but it was about the medicine mostly. Mm. And we were extremely lucky because the stories that we used and that were created were real stories. You know, they had researchers who were actively looking for proper medical stories that had happened.
Yeah.
And we used cutting edge equipment. Yeah. So that was, I came away thinking that I was a surgeon. You know, give me a scalpel. You know.
And I read somewhere at some point that you said that you felt that when you left the show, part of that was to do with they didn't quite know what to do with women of a certain age. Is that correct?
Yes.
Or has that been blown up?
No. Well, it's kind of been blown up and taken out of, slightly out of the context in which I meant it.
Yeah.
Which was that everybody else had left. All of the characters who I had had any sort of significant relationship with had already gone. Mm. And there was Laura, she was left, and Noah. They were the two. And they had brought in a whole new group of actors who, I mean, they were just, they seemed a lot younger. I mean, there was like, and I felt a little bit like it. We're rehearsing at the moment, and I have a line in my rehearsal where I say to the actor who's playing my brother, I say, God, Peter, we're middle-aged, we're ancient. And it kind of felt like that because, I mean, there was one actor who came in and he was supposed to be the new hot doctor and he had black nail polish on. I was like, what? No. So I sort of, I felt like I didn't, my time was over.
Right.
I didn't relate anymore to, and my character didn't relate to any of these new characters who were coming on board. Mm. And so I did feel that that's the context in which I felt like I'm, you know, I've now been put out to pasture.
Yeah.
But having said that, I had, it wasn't acrimonious at all. I mean, I sat and had a meeting with John Wells and his sort of one of the other producers, and we sat in his office and we all cried, you know, because I loved it so much. I didn't want it to end, and they didn't want it to end. But we all agreed that they didn't know what to do with my character anymore.
Yeah.
All of the original writers had also gone on to, you know, different things. So it was a whole new stable of writers. And those writers wanted to write for the new characters that they were creating. They didn't want to sort of write for somebody who somebody else had created.
Yeah.
So we kind of ignored, it was very, very sad, but also we all knew that it was the right thing to do.
And so then after a long period of time of living in America, you eventually moved back to the UK.
Yeah.
Which must have been a culture shift anyway. Ooh. I know I'm jumping over some. It's a whistle stop tour of your career, but let's go to Doctor Who. Why not? Because
I commuted. I was commuting from LA to
Film Doctor Who.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
So okay. I still lived in LA, and but so I would come over and do pretty much always two episode story arcs or three episode story arcs. But I would fly. I mean, Cardiff became my home from home. Mm. It still is. It's extraordinary. So much is filmed in Cardiff. Yeah. But that was sort of the next thing after after Dr. Corday, really. And it was, that was amazing. Which I was not expecting that at all.
Another character that's had a major impact, hasn't it?
Yes. I mean, I literally thought I was only going to be in Doctor Who for two episodes. I hadn't got a clue. But I just kept coming back. And
what do you think? Why is it that character particularly seems to have resonated with Doctor Who audiences?
The wonderful thing is to see so many women, young girls, attach themselves to her spirit. And, I mean, part of me, I find it kind of quite difficult to understand because she's kind of badass. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm not sure whether her morals are that great, actually, you know. But I think it's because she has heart. She has heart, and she has such a loyalty and a love for this Gallifreyan. He's not human, and that never dies. Mm. And she's also brave. She's strong. She is badass. So she's kind of, in a sense, she's got complexities and she's got flaws, which we all have as human beings. So I think that might be why people like her.
Yeah. And can I then ask you, before I throw it open, so to take you to another strong female character, which is Dr. Yeah, I did that. That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
Which is Dr. Stockman in The Enemy of the People. Mm. So we're at halfway through week three of a 4-week rehearsal process. It's, well, I don't know, Ibsen's most famous play, probably. I mean, he wrote quite a few, but it's a biggie. And that character particularly. And for those who don't know the play, that character is usually male. And we've had Rebecca Lenkovich, who's an amazing British playwright, has regenderized, I don't know if that's a word I keep using, I'm going to stick with, regenderized the lead character of Dr. Stockman from a male to a female, and that's the character Alex is playing.
Yeah.
So how are rehearsals going, actually? That's the first thing I want to ask you about it. How are we doing?
We're doing really well. I could do with an extra 2 weeks.
Yes, always, always the case.
I mean, as we sort of get deeper and deeper into rehearsal, I realise that there are so many layers to the play, and I have a feeling that on our last night, I'll be starting to understand her and get to grips with her, and it'll be like that. No, I don't want it to end yet because I'm just understanding her now. I think it's an incredible play, and I'm not somebody who is desperate to play Hamlet or Richard III, or I applaud the actresses that want to do that, but I don't have a real need to. And yet, for me, it seemed, having read the original, because I didn't have Rebecca's adaptation to start with when Adam offered me the role, but having read the original, I just thought, well, this absolutely works as a gender reversal. I mean, completely. I mean, we have female GPs. Having lived in America and just come over from America, I was very conscious of the scandal in Flint, Michigan, where it was actually a female doctor who had told the local authorities that she believed that it was the water that was making the local people, many children, so sick, and she was not believed. She was sort of her fears were pushed aside. And also having watched Hillary Clinton battle with Trump, and having seen all of Trump's cronies sort of standing there chanting for her to be locked up, lock her up, lock her up, and hearing Trump call people enemy of the people, I just sort of felt this is very current. It's incredibly topical. The play has been put into a contemporary setting, and it really works with a woman playing the part. And what I find so interesting, sorry, once you ask me a question, I just keep on talking.
3.5 weeks into rehearsal, I know this.
What I find so interesting is, even though the play's been adapted and it is contemporary, I mean, Rebecca is sticking, as a writer, she's basically sticking to the original intentions of the lines. And the fascinating thing is that in rehearsal, sometimes I sort of imagine if one of these characters would be talking to the character of Dr. Stockman as was written, as a man, we would have a different reaction or a different feeling to those words or that energy than when it's being directed to a woman. Even though actually the intention is no different, but it's what we all have just sort of, what we are used to, what we absorb, how we see women, or how women have been placed in society. So it's really fascinating.
And actually what we've had to do in turn is, so the male character of Dr. Stockman traditionally has a wife. So we've made it so that you have a husband. And what's really interesting is Decca Wormsley, who plays the husband, who some of you will know because he was in Wonderland, played the Colonel in the first production of Wonderland. Brilliant actor. Mm. Of course, now he's playing what was written at first as a female character. He has hardly any lines, does he? And that's what Decca's discovering. Most of it, and most of his lines are just your first name. Teresa, Teresa, Teresa.
Like, yes.
And so you suddenly go, the other day I was looking at it with Decca, we're going, this is a bit of a thin character. And then we went, of course, because in 1880 when Ibsen wrote it, it was female, and
it
was a wife, you know. So we're having to really work hard to put more meat on the bones of that character, actually.
He's doing it amazingly
and he is, though. Yeah.
And I mean, my gosh, even though he doesn't have many lines, you don't notice he doesn't, because he is so vital to the production, to the story.
That's sort of why I went after chasing him for that role.
Because
I knew he would bring...
Absolutely brilliant.
I just want to, first of all, say thank you so much to all of you for coming this evening. Thank you for your support of the Playhouse. We couldn't do the work without everybody here. But also to say a massive thank you, Alex, after a long day in rehearsals, for coming over, speaking so eloquently, being so interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Alex Kingston, everybody.
that was Adam Penford and the great Alex Kingston. She really was terrific. And Enemy of the People runs from the 13th of September. Get your tickets now. And we'll be back later this month with another edition of Nottingham Playcast with all kinds of features for you to enjoy. See you then.